You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Wednesday. It is October 22nd, and I am your fill-in host, Christina Long, here in the chair for Matt Jones today, who will be back with you later this week. Today on the show, I'm joined in the studio by Ethan Wisterman to talk a little bit of Arkansas football and how the national landscape is shaping up around the coaching search and where Arkansas falls in that hierarchy. Anthony Christensen also joins me in the studio to talk about Arkansas basketball's upcoming exhibition games. Basketball season is finally just about here, so we'll preview those games as well and talk a little bit about what we heard from players and coaches here in the lead up to the season. But first, a word from Kendall King.
Four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I'm joined in the studio by Ethan Wisterman, and we are going to talk a little bit about a list that ESPN put out. I believe this was this morning. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN published a list ranking the open power conference head football coaching jobs that are available right now. And Arkansas is on this list as one of the openings. He went through all seven. Matt and I were talking on the phone the other day. We kept forgetting about Stanford because Stanford fired their coach before the season. But Stanford is still open. That is a search that has been, we talked about getting to the market early and teams wanting to do that. They got to the market as early as you pretty much can. So Stanford is in here. We've got UCLA, Stanford, Penn State, Oklahoma State, Arkansas, all these jobs that we've been discussing here on the show. So Adam Rittenberg does this ranking. I think the top two is pretty clear. Penn State, number one, Florida, number two. You could have some quibbles with which one of those should be first, but I don't think anyone would argue with the fact that those are some order of those two are the top two, with just the history with both of them, the resources with both of them, the emphasis that both of those schools put on football. Those are the biggest jobs that are currently open. So I don't know. Do you feel like Florida should be above Penn State? I don't really, because of the recent success Penn State has had. It's interesting to say that when they just fired their coach. But in terms of playoff and things like that, Penn State is up there and has had the more recent success. Do you feel strongly about Penn State versus Florida?
Yeah, I feel like it's like a coin toss of who could be one and two, because both have such good history and a really passionate fan base. Both have big stadiums, big donor bases, big alumni bases. There's some recent success for both programs. It's how recent are we talking? Penn State's is a lot more recent. But I think that either one, it's like there's an infrastructure there that's going to provide a coach some stability, at least at the start, to be able to get your recruiting off to a nice start, to really attract some top coaches to come alongside you. So those two, I really am not like super passionate about which should be one or two, but I do think that once you get beyond those one and two, and I mean, hey, we could have, before the season opens, Auburn and LSU open too. I think those are two of the hotter ones. People are talking about Kentucky as well, but especially Auburn, LSU, those could get up there, and then you're really debating what's the top job on the market. But between those two, it's hard to debate with some of the ones below it right now to be above them.
Right. This is a really interesting list. Sometimes when I see what we call a listicle, I'm unsure, having written many a listicle in my time, there are some that are very detailed, and then there are some that are just quick hits, like here's just the basic what you need to know. This is a really detailed story that ESPN has put together. So on each of these jobs, they've gone through multiple categories. So on-field performance, access to the college football playoff, roster building, meaning like recruiting potential, university leadership, financial support, and then a brief explainer about here's why this job ranks here. So they're going through each of these things for each of these seven schools. And so it's a really interesting breakdown that's really helpful for, people like us who are focused on one team, fans who are focused on Arkansas or even just the SEC. I recommend looking at this because there's a ton of good information in here, especially when it comes to the university leadership side. That is something that is so important in these coaching searches. It's something that we've been talking about a lot with Arkansas. And same thing with financial support. Those things obviously go hand in hand. And so being able to get a little bit of an overview of what that looks like at some of these other schools is very helpful. So like I said, Penn State 1, Florida 2. 3, 4, 5 is interesting to me. I'm not sure if I'm here to make a reorder here in my own personal opinion, but I think – The these are kind of a group that you could maybe make them somewhat interchangeable. So I'm curious what you think about this. So they have Oklahoma State 3, Virginia Tech 4, and Arkansas 5 out of these 7. So then below Arkansas is Stanford at 6, and then UCLA at 7. So, you know, I guess you're talking about middle or bottom of the middle, but it's a seven group sample size, or 7-team sample size here, so a small group. But I'm interested in Oklahoma State at 3. And the justification is basically it's the Big 12, so you have a pretty easy path to the College Football Playoff. Not as easy as I would say the ACC. The Big 12, there's been a ton of parity, which has made the Big 12 a really fun league. Once Oklahoma and Texas left, Oklahoma State was expected to kind of fill that vacuum as the top dog in the Big 12, and it just hasn't happened. And so that's allowed for the Big 12 to be kind of it feels like anyone's game preseason during the year. It's been that way kind of in these last couple years of the new Big 12. And so you definitely have access to the College Football Playoff if Oklahoma State, you know, if their next coach can kind of get them into that level and fill that void that was left behind. But I think there's a financial support question about, okay, T. Boone Pickens died in 2019. A lot of people are unsure what that means as far as who's funding Oklahoma State football now. You know, there's been a lot of confusion there. There was a lot of confusion with the end of the Gundy tenure for the last couple of years about when are they going to do it? What's the kind of, you know, alignment, as people like to say, with the school? So it's interesting. I guess I don't necessarily disagree with them at 3, but for some reason I was a little surprised to see them that high. What do you make of Oklahoma State at 3 here?
Yeah, after having been to, obviously we went to a game there last year and got to see, you know, the stadium up close and personal, get a vibe of kind of the fan base, everything. It surprises me from a, like, if you're just putting, like, Object A and Object B beside each other without any of the, you know, the context we're talking about with path to the playoff in the Big 12, and just looking at fan base support, kind of the brand recognition and all that, just comparing just those two things with Arkansas and Oklahoma State, I don't view Oklahoma State as a better place and a better program as far as...
I view them pretty similarly, I feel like.
I just feel like Arkansas has a lot more potential with financial backing, at least as of right now, and it has the bigger stadium. You're competing in the SEC. As far as it's... I think it's in itself maybe a more attractive on-surface-level job as far as what resources you might have and what you could turn it into. Oklahoma State has the advantage of, like you said, a really just like open Big 12. It feels like every single week this year there's like a game in the Big 12 that I have my eye on, just because it could, you know, be the fine line between this two-loss Big 12 team winning the conference over this other two-loss Big 12 team. It's a really, the parity in that conference is up there. I just feel like Arkansas in itself, you're not competing within your own state with another power program like Oklahoma State and OU right now. I mean, they're just in totally different places as far as where their programs are at. But we've seen in recent history, they can be in very similar footings. So whoever takes that job at Oklahoma State, like, their job is honestly, like, you can't be losing like they did this year, Tulsa. You're, like, not even playing second fiddle in your state. So I'm surprised that they're 3, just because I don't get the sense there that it's, like, I don't know. I wouldn't put it above Arkansas personally, but I can see the justification. I wish that on this listicle, like you said, it's really in-depth. I kind of wish saw a little bit more of like a, like, ranking these jobs are open, like which one ranks first in financial support. And then you kind of have more of like a metric of like what you weighed in, because like it's clear when you look at this that they had to take into account that Oklahoma State theoretically should be able to compete in the Big 12 faster than Arkansas can compete in the SEC to make it to the playoff. I think that's got to be the clear justification to rank it higher. But like it's also hard to argue with Arkansas being where it's at, given how difficult of a job it's proven to be for new coaches, honestly, since April 2012. It's a hard place to win. You're competing against every single weekend. Teams that have been there, done that, as far as like you're facing the Texas and the Alabama and the Georgia, they're in your conference. And I just think if you're at Oklahoma State, you're going into it like, okay, you're facing Arizona State. You're facing all these teams that, like Texas Tech, that, like, I just don't think that they are that much head and shoulders above you, even if they've had some success in recent years, to make you think that you can't take that seat. Arkansas to rise to the top of the SEC would have to, like, completely uproot its, like, some of these other programs, because that's the thing with the SEC. For some teams to succeed, others have to start doing worse. And I just think that's harder to do in the SEC. I mean, ask Vanderbilt. They're kind of right now the team that you would have never thought could rise to where they are in the SEC. And it's because they invested in a coach who had a vision and they've built on it. And they've kind of, I think, like got some magic in a bottle right now with their quarterback situation, how he's playing. It's like, to do that, you have to have a lot of things go your way. And Arkansas, it's proven to be a tough place.
And that's, Vanderbilt is so interesting because they are the exception. Because, you know, we're sitting here going, it's so hard to compete in the SEC. And that's, you know, in the story here, for the justification for Arkansas at five, it says under why the job ranks here, one of the reasons is, you know, Arkansas's backslide in football and position within an increasingly challenging conference creates a steep climb to college football playoff relevancy. That's the line from the story. And I agree with that. But Vanderbilt is showing us that if you strike it rich, basically, if you get the right coach, if you put the right, you know, it's not just luck. They've put a lot into their scouting department. They've really committed to being more successful. So it's not sheer luck, but they are showing that you can't necessarily just throw up your hands and go, well, it's hard to win in the SEC, because nobody was expecting Vanderbilt to do this, and they are. And they've, you know, they've taken advantage of some of the, I don't know, it's hard because, like you said, you need some other teams to take a step back, and I don't really feel like we've seen that, and yet Vanderbilt has just kind of forced their way in there. Yeah. They haven't necessarily needed a major drop-off. We have seen some teams underperform, like Texas, for example. We thought Texas would be at the top of this league. They're not. Yeah. And so that obviously opens a window, and you need things like that to kind of happen and stack up over the course of years in order for you to like really arrive at that point as a program. And I don't think Vanderbilt's necessarily there, but I do think the Vanderbilt situation, and Matt and I have talked about this with Indiana too, about they are the ones that they're such an exception that you almost can't anymore say, well, it's just so hard in the SEC and you can't expect them to do it that quick, because they get a new quarterback, they get Diego Pavia in there. It was pretty quick, and they've continued it this year. Now, what they do after him is a big question, but I think that's something that's so interesting and something that's changed a lot in college football is it is maybe easier to come up from the bottom than it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can even, people will hate to admit it, but look at what's happening at Missouri under Eli Drinkwitz. Like, they thrust themselves into the top part of the SEC the past years. You cannot argue with the results. I know you can maybe say the schedule's been easy, but the results are there. You've got to kind of find that right culture fit, I think, that's able to go in and really get a whole fan base on board with the vision, obviously financially, and then also just like within the day-to-day with what coaches you bring in, the culture that you instill in your program. Because I think that you're looking at some teams right now that have push themselves up that tier. It's hard to stay up there too. I mean, that's South Carolina. It feels like every year they're going in and out from being relevant and to not being relevant. Florida even, you know, we thought they might be in that league this year. It's hard to stay there, but we've seen Missouri and Ole Miss, quite frankly, they have coaches that I think fit the, you know, the characteristics that those particular programs needed to maybe unlock a little bit of what will help make the program be successful. And look at them. They're staying near the top. That's what's hard to do, is maintain that consistency. And Vanderbilt hasn't, quite frankly, I mean, they were pretty good last year and they've taken the step up this year. I think, can that be sustained there? That's the hard part. It's, you can have some overnight fixes, but like, are you going to have an Indiana situation with Vanderbilt where I don't think anybody's arguing what Cignetti can keep doing there now, because he's just proven enough. So there's in the SEC, it's tough sledding, and I think that's ultimately what makes Arkansas maybe less attractive than an Oklahoma State.
But at the same time, I don't think it's a balance, but I don't think there's that many coaches that look at the SEC and are like scared to compete. I think a lot of coaches, just because of the kind of person that tends to be a coach and the way that this industry kind of is, you want an SEC job still because you want to prove yourself in one of the top two leagues in the country. You want to be able to show that you can win. And a lot of these coaches believe that they can, and they all think they can be the guy, and they all want to be the guy. So there is that. But obviously, the idea that you are set up for playoff success is also a big deal. You know, you might not necessarily want to take what could be a harder path when you could have something where you could make it a little quicker, like in the Big 12 or in the ACC. And so Virginia Tech here at number four, the ACC question to me is, yes, it is an easier path to the playoff even than the Big 12, I think. The long-term health of the ACC is a big question, because I just don't know, with everything that's gone on with, you know, the frustrations of the top two teams being Clemson and Florida State, and throw North Carolina in there as well, you know, the legal battles of them against the ACC, the ACC trying to add some teams, you know, West Coast and then SMU to kind of try to save itself. The long-term health of the ACC is a big question. Are you in a league that is going to go the way of the Pac-12 in the next round of realignment, in whatever year that is, that all the TV deals are up again? I don't even remember. But it's not that far away, and we're going to do all this again. And is the ACC going to make it through that? We don't know. And so that's maybe something you're thinking about. That'll become more of a conversation as we get closer and closer to that kind of next realignment date in a few years. But I think that is something to think about, is because of the makeup of the league right now, you might have an easier time getting the playoff now. But if you are somebody who's looking for a job that you're going to have for a long time, what's your conference going to look like? Yep. What's your situation going to be? And I think Virginia Tech has a lot going on. And maybe tell me if you think this is misguided, but I see a similarity here in Arkansas with Virginia Tech to, these are programs that had kind of a heyday that was a long time ago, but not that long ago, and have since trying to, you know, for Arkansas it was after trying to replace Petrino. For Virginia Tech, it's been trying to replace Frank Beamer. They, you know, which different situations. Frank Beamer was a long time the guy there, and they just haven't really gotten the right guy. They've made a couple of missteps since then. Arkansas, too, a couple of missteps. And so I think they're in a similar situation to where the glory days are not that far away, and you're trying to get back to that, but they also, it was a totally different era. It was a totally different world. So what do you do to kind of get back to that? So I see some similarities in these jobs. Virginia Tech has a lot going on financially. They had a lot of concern about how they were at the bottom of the ACC and a lot of their spending and resources. Arkansas in a similar situation, and they've been very, you know, pretty public about their concern about how their resources stack up in the SEC. So that's another kind of similarity. I don't know the numbers differential between, you know, what Virginia Tech is bringing to the table versus what Arkansas is, but Virginia Tech has gotten a significant financial commitment from its university. It has injected a bunch of cash. It is committed to providing football and athletic department with more resources. The school's board of, I think they're called the Board of Visitors, which, interesting name, added $229 million to the department's budget for the next 4 years. So that's a big deal. And Arkansas is, we don't know yet, you know, Hunter Yurecek has been tasked with creating a financial plan and a financial commitment to support the next staff, but we don't know what that looks like yet. It's not going to look the same as Virginia Tech. I'm not saying that the Board of Trustees is going to inject $200 million or that they need to. It seems like it's more on the athletic department side to say, hey, here's what we need, here's how we're going to get it. I don't think you're going to see what Virginia Tech had. But similar situations in that these are two teams that have been in the bottom of their conference in terms of financial support. They want to get back to competing in their conference, and they have to be ready to commit whatever their next staff is going to need. They have to commit that.
Yeah, and you know, Hunter Yurecek, when he had his meeting with the Board of Trustees up here, they gave him like their word that they're fully committed to helping out the football program get what it needs. And it's just, you know, practically, what does that look like? How does this get done? Who are you gonna? That's why this hire is so important for Arkansas. I mean, we're gonna beat it like we're gonna keep beating this drum until somebody's hired. But whoever you hire has to be able to awaken donors and awaken a fan base that, you know, quite frankly, like you said, hasn't seen a successful product in a hot minute. That's the deal with Arkansas and Virginia Tech that's so similar. Like you mentioned, is you've seen in recent enough history that whenever the football team is good and is nationally relevant, what that fan base it awakens, what that can turn into. I mean, even Arkansas just a few years ago under Sam Pittman, whenever it was an Outback Bowl team, like they were nationally relevant enough that the fan base kind of came alive for football that year. And you know, we saw a great crowd on Saturday just for a game against Texas A&M with an Arkansas team that had a second game under an interim coach. Like, the fan base and the support is there. It's how do you get that financial backing that can really elevate you into that next tier. And that's the expanded college football playoff really changes how we view all these jobs. Because if we're just looking at a four-team playoff, I really don't think, like, this comparing Arkansas to Oklahoma State, for example, with the path to the college football playoff, like, it's not that important because neither one you're really truly.
You got to do a lot before you can even get to that point.
Exactly.
That can't even be, whereas now in an expanded playoff, the gap between you and a 12-team or 14 or whatever they're going to expand it to playoff is not that big.
Yeah.
You want, you know, especially for Arkansas, there's some places you want to get before. You know, you want to become more competitive in the SEC first. You got to kind of put the horse before the cart a little bit. But it doesn't feel like as much of a pie in the sky as saying, okay, because 14 playoff teams are going undefeated. They're losing one game. Arkansas's got a long way to go. Lose two games, I guess we didn't see three lost teams in the playoff last year. That was the whole thing. There might have been one, but you can lose a couple games and be fine. Arkansas, that's a little bit more attainable in the short term, I think.
Yeah, and that's the
thing.
With
the right coach, obviously.
At Oklahoma State, like, if we're comparing path to the playoff, it's like, how do we win the Big 12? At Arkansas, it really only has to be, like, which two, maybe three, depending on what combination of losses you have, can you afford? And if it was a 12-team playoff in 2021, Sam Pittman's second year when they went to the Outback Bowl, that team was, like, theoretically a loss away from being in the thick of potential, like, 12 seed playoff talk. Like, it's not that the gap, like you said, just isn't that far anymore from being in those talks. And we saw Arkansas reach that level under Sam Pittman to where they were one of the best 25 teams in the nation. And that gets you to where you can at least get in conversations, and it's not just like a pipe dream. It's like something that you actually can work toward. So that's really the biggest factor, I think, in weighing these head coach openings. Now, if you're looking at it from the college football playoff side of it, is what will it take at your program? Like, I mean, if you're taking the Oklahoma State job and you want to get to the playoff, I think you're saying one, maybe two losses if you can win the conference. And you're in the playoff.
More SEC teams are get into the playoff than Big 12 teams.
Yeah, exactly.
It's basically weighted that way.
Yeah, but it's and then you say, which is harder, to go win the Big 12 or to be a two or three loss SEC team? And I'd say they're probably about, like,
depends on the year a little bit, but it's similar. And so there's a lot going on as far as comparing conferences, and so I think that's what makes a ranking like this difficult, and why I hesitate to be like, this is Arkansas should be at the, you know, I hesitate to take a hard position on that. But it's interesting to see. I always find it fascinating, and I know different people, you know, mileage may vary on this about whether you care about this or not, but I always find it really interesting to hear how national people outside of Arkansas view Arkansas, view the Arkansas job, view the team, things like that. I just think it's interesting when we're so in it every day and we have our perspective of it. We're both from here. We have that. We have our certain perspective. I like kind of seeing what it looks like from the outside looking in. And it may or may not matter to you, but I just think it's kind of an interesting data point to consider.
Yeah, and I think that's why I think it would have been interesting had they, like, done university leadership and then rank what out of seven on these. Because I just would like to see, like, really the national perception, what the faultiest parts of Arkansas is and what parts of Arkansas, you know, they think make it an attractive job. Because I think that's where we're at right now here, is we're so kind of in the weeds of, like, what is the real enticing thing for a quality coach to want to come here, given just kind of where the program's been? And I'd be curious to hear how national people view, like, specific aspects. And we got a good outline in this of kind of how they view it, but, like, how do they think that Arkansas's university leadership stacks up against these other jobs as far as supporting football?
Something interesting in here in the financial support section for Arkansas that we have heard, I mean, Chris Lowe said this on the podcast, people within Arkansas have been saying this. The takeaway there is basically, you know, it is not as if there is no money in this state for Arkansas to pull from. And that's kind of what they say here, is there are donors who, if you can get them to give, will give. And so there's potential there if you can get the financial investment, both from donors and then also if you can figure out internally within your athletic department how to come up with those resources. So it is, you know, a quote here from an industry source says Arkansas has the booster network that is capable of doing something significant. I don't know if they will, but they can. And that's the thing. They've been able to, they just weren't, for whatever reason. And we've talked on this show about all the different reasons that could be many times, you know, whenever we talk about kind of some of this business stuff. Something else I thought was pretty funny was what they said about Hunter Yurecek. And it's not funny, I guess, but it's an interesting way to succinctly sum up everything that has happened with Hunter Yurecek and his comments about Arkansas's financial state. And so they talked about what he said, they said his recent comments about Arkansas's ability to compete for national championships in football drew criticism and a later clarification. So there's some tension around him.
Yeah.
I was like, that does sum it up. There is some tension.
Yeah, I'm about to say they got it all in one sentence.
Yeah.
But no, it's that's where you're at. I think that's got to be the frustrating part for all Arkansas fans, is knowing that there is potential here, like definite potential. You have an industry source in the story saying it, for that to just be unlocked. You just have to get the right people in place to unlock that. I mean, and you're seeing in basketball, which I get it, it takes a lot more money to fund a football program than basketball, to be honest. But like, you got a big time booster supporting a big time head coach, and look at what that can turn into now. I mean, they're one of the more talked about programs in the nation, very nationally relevant. You look at baseball, they've got some support, and they've got a proven coach. It all is just getting the right pieces in place that inspire people to want to invest. And that's the thing. Like, people don't want to invest in something that they're not confident it's a good investment in. And so you have to make a hire that really inspires people. And that's why this is so interesting, I think, ranking these two, is because, like, in theory, like, it's, are we comparing these all with the exact same candidate in mind? Like, if you have James Franklin, is this how he'd rank them? Because, like, if you have a James Franklin looking at, I would think James Franklin would look at Arkansas as a greater job than Oklahoma State, because I think that there's more opportunity if he's the coach. It's like, are we ranking these in terms of how attractive the job is to get a high-end coach, or how successful you can be once you're there?
Yeah, it's hard, because it does depend heavily on the candidate and where they're coming from, you know, where they want to go, where they're at in their career, if this is going to be somebody's last job, if this is going to be their first big job. There's a lot of variety that goes in there. You know, I think that's one of the things that's been so difficult about trying to project what Arkansas might do coaching wise is, okay, if you don't go Petrino, do you go proven head coach? Do you go get a sitting head coach from somewhere, from a major school? Do you go get somebody like an Alex Golish from USF, who's looking to kind of break into this league? There's so many directions you can go. And then as a coach, depending on what level you're at, there's so many directions you can go in terms of what you want your next step to be.
Yeah. And I think that's why making this hire, you have to be mindful of what will excite a fan base, and you have to be probably more so mindful of, who do my big time boosters want? Who do they have faith in? And there's just so many variables at play whenever you're making a football hire, of like what you need to be looking for. Because I think you could take, here's candidate A that you truly think is a better coach, and you think X's and O's wise that this guy is a rising star, but he won't be able to inspire the fan base. He just isn't that type of candidate.
The donors don't want him.
They don't want him. But then you have this coach, pretty good coach, could surround with some good coordinators and stuff, and the fan base would love him. And the donors, I'm like, I think you go with that guy.
It's hard. And every AD, every hiring committee, everybody that's making the decisions weighs it a little bit differently. And it's very, there is so much to consider. I am so glad it is not my job to hire coaches. Yeah. I love that we just get to talk about it.
And I just later. I think it's funny that as much as we sit in here and we talk about this stuff, like, I think we're all in agreement right now that there is so much momentum with Bobby Petrino, just the guy who's already sitting there, and you know what he's made Arkansas's football program before. And it's just like, we can talk all these theoreticals, and then there's like this side of me that's like, he's probably the one that's already there.
I've really
there.
Started to feel like that's just like, that's what they're going to do. And that's not based on any, just to be clear, that's me speculating. That's not me hearing.
It just feels like
people,
the momentum is picking up there.
It does.
Which is crazy, because I would have thought before he took over as interim that there'd need to be wins at this point to be feeling that way. And I think it's less that they've lost games and they've been competitive with a defense that frankly just isn't a lot of the time. I think it's that what you saw from the fans on Saturday. I think that made a big statement, to be honest.
It really did, and it's got me thinking maybe that's a real option for them. You know, I knew it was a real option, but maybe that's something that could work better than I thought. I kind of thought, okay, you're going to do a retread, whatever. And I still kind of feel that way. I still think my ideal scenario and what I would want to do would be to get somebody new, get something fresh, do something different. And I think, but I've started to, because I just don't think retreads usually work that well.
Yeah.
But I've started to kind of feel like maybe it would work. Give him the right defensive coordinator, maybe it works.
Yeah.
I've come around on the idea of it not being a bad idea more than I thought I would.
I think Arkansas fans are so fearful of you go fresh and you have another Chad Morris experience where you
They've
just regress.
Before.
I think that a lot of people, the way they're feeling right now is because of that recent thing. And then I think Sam Pittman was your coach that got you out of the dungeon.
Yeah.
I mean, you were deep down in there in that dungeon. He got you out of it. And I think that the justification for fans right now of Bobby Petrino is they think that he is a good option to, like, people wanted Sam Pittman to be the segue coach to get you to, I know we've made a lot of comparisons with basketball program and that, but they thought Sam Pittman could be that segue coach to the next, you know, really splashy hire. And honestly, maybe you need a longer runway to get to that point, and Bobby Petrino could put a patch on your program for three. And that's a big if. Like, we're assuming maybe Bobby Petrino could put a patch on your program for 3 years. He can retire, have some closure with Arkansas, all that good stuff, and then you're ready. I think that that's where people are. They see rankings like these, and they're like, is there a better option for Arkansas right now to get them on pace to really be competitive? And I think that this is very similar to whenever Sam Pittman took the Arkansas job. It was not an attractive job at all. I would have liked to see these rankings then. And he was a guy who wanted the job. And I think that fans are like, okay, well, there's another guy that wants the job right now, and we know that he wants the job. And he's been a head coach before. And he's had some success before. Even, I mean, people are willing to look over real downfalls, both at Arkansas and at Louisville, for some quick instant success they think could happen. And I think that with Petrino right now, a lot of people feel like he's not getting younger. He could be a fix your program up a little bit and then get to the next coach. It's just so funny that the same coach who
put you in this situation
in the first place, now people want to be the one to bring you out of the hole again. And it's just, how did we get here? I keep on coming back to that. How the heck did we get here? But, like, people see him being, they're willing to take the risk that Bobby Petrino, you hire him again and he will set you up for the next glory stretch instead of the last time Bobby Petrino was hired. He set you up for, obviously there were some great years, but with the way everything
could
went
have been
down,
more. Could have been more.
There could have been more. And the way everything went down, it got you in this situation in the first place. So it starts with Bobby Petrino, and I think it's somehow gotten to where we're ending there with a lot of our opinions on this stuff. But you cannot deny that at least in this area and the spaces we've been in, there's been real momentum picking up there, I feel like, the past week.
We have a long way to go in this coaching search. It's only the end of October, and I don't think we're going to know who the next coach is until after the season is over. So we have a lot of speculating, a lot of rumors, a lot of evaluation to do before then. But when we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to join me to talk a little bit about men's basketball, as it's almost time for basketball already. And I know Anthony's excited, I know Ethan's excited, and I know a lot of Razorback fans are excited about what John Calipari is bringing.
4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We're joined now by Anthony Christensen in the studio to talk a little bit of men's basketball, since, can't believe it, but the season is pretty much here. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. I know you have. Bentonville Glass, serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, and if you're looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. I know you've been counting down the days. I know you've been getting all of your AP thoughts together. You've voted in preseason. You've done preseason SEC selections and everything. It is about to be Anthony Christensen's time of year. So first exhibition, Friday, 7 p.m. against Cincinnati. That's in Fayetteville. And then they go on the road to Memphis on Monday at 8 p.m. With these exhibitions, I think you and I were chatting a little bit, maybe it was at the football game, about, you know, priming for overreaction. From and internally,
the amount
not just...
I was overreacting to Murray State beating Xavier. Oh my goodness.
And so I wanted to ask you, if you think back to last season and the exhibitions Arkansas played against Kansas and TCU, and the conclusions you drew, or maybe not necessarily conclusions, but impressions you got from those games, is there anything that you saw in those exhibitions last year that you remember? Either yes, we pegged that from the exhibitions we saw, you know, we learned something from the exhibitions that proved true for much of the season, or something that you maybe thought you got in the exhibitions that was totally wrong or that changed over the course of the year?
Let me think, because it was so long ago.
I know.
No, I think the biggest thing that you can draw from, you know, those exhibitions especially was, you know, how much of a role the freshmen played right away. And I think that's something you're going to see, you know, immediately with this as well. I think those are the biggest things that you want to look at with exhibitions is how much of a role do you see the freshmen or transfers playing? For a lot of other teams, it's how much of a role are these international players playing, which I don't really think you're going to see that much, you know, with Arkansas, especially with Kareem Ratell probably being out. But I think that's the biggest thing that I took away from those exhibitions last year was, okay, Boogie Flynn's going to play on the ball a ton. You know, Carter Knox is going to play a role in the rotation. Bailey Richmond's going to play a role in the rotation. You know, so I think those are the biggest things that I kind of took away from those. And obviously that came to fruition. I think it's always going to come to fruition with the John Calipari team. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that you want to look for in exhibitions is you don't want to read too much into, you know, rotations or, you know, five-man lineups, you know, in the middle of a second half, you know, because sometimes those are going to be different when the real, quote-unquote, real games are going on. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I took away from that is that. But if I remember correctly, the starting lineup from that first game did end up being the starting lineup for the season opener against Lipscomb. So maybe that's something to look for. But yeah, so those are the biggest things that I look for in these exhibitions is, you know, who's ready to, you know, be a part of the rotation right away. You know, I expect Darius Acuff, Malik Thomas to be ready for that. Is Isaiah Seely ready to be, you know, part of the full rotation? You know, I think we've seen some good moments from him in the moments we've been allowed to see. But yeah, it's exciting. It's basketball time. That's yeah. Where, my bread and butter.
Where do you see Isaiah Seely? Because I'll tease real quick. We're working on it this week. We're finishing up the next issue of Hogs Illustrated that will come out, I guess it would be next week. And Anthony's got a really good story in there about Isaiah Seely. He got to talk to his dad, some of his other family members, just kind of about his background, you know, being a Springdale kid. With Isaiah Seely, you know, obviously the five-star guys are being talked about a lot with Acuff and Malik Thomas. Where does Seely fit in? What do you expect to see from him this year? Do you expect him to be contributing a lot, or is it just kind of we have to wait and see?
I think it's more of a wait and see with him. I like I said, you can see it in these, you know, little scrimmages and practices we've gotten to see. You can see the raw talent is there. You know, he's extremely athletic. He's, you know, he's long. He's got bounce. You know, he's got a lot of things that you really like. I think the biggest thing that will determine, you know, how much we see of him, especially, you know, later on in the season, once we get into SEC play and everything like that, is, you know, can he, you know, iron out some of those freshman mistakes you see, some of those turnovers that, you know, can lead to, you know, bad things. I think that's the biggest thing that you want to see from him. I think in Hot Springs, you know, we saw, you know, he's got some range. You know, is he somebody you want to be, you know, a go-to three-point threat? Maybe not necessarily, but, you know, he can get to the basket, he can shoot from outside, and he's, you know, he's a good passer as well, which I don't think a lot of people, you know, will think about when they think about Isaiah Seely. But, you know, he's got all of the tools to be a guy who can contribute right away. It's just, you know, how much is he going to be ready to, you know, compete against SEC power conference level defenses, and how much is he going to iron out some of those freshman mistakes that you see from just about every freshman who's not projected to be a one and done kind of guy. So I think it's certainly a wait and see. I think we'll see him a decent amount early in the season, and how much we see him, you know, as the season progresses, I think is kind of down to, you know, how much growth he shows, how ready he is, and how much you see that not just in, you know, the non-conference games against, you know, Southern or Winthrop or Jackson State, but against, you know, Michigan State.
Those big ones,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. He's one of those guys who I'm really excited to watch, you know, and obviously I'm not just saying that because I wrote a 1,700-word story about him. But
you always get, you know, a little more, and I don't mean you, I mean like a writer, you always get a little more attached to the guys that you feel like you've gotten to know a little bit from interviewing them, talking mm-hmm. to their family. You feel like you get to know them a little bit, and then you know, you'd like to see them have a little success just because you feel like you know them a little bit.
Yeah, no, and you know, I very much enjoyed getting to know him a little bit, getting to know his family. They were all very, you know, everybody was great to me in the process of, you know, writing that story and everything, which I've been, you know, working on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
but, you know, I think he's one of the more intriguing players on the roster, and it'll be interesting to see how much of a role he's ready to play immediately.
So we've talked about the newcomers and how we expect to learn a lot about them just from the sheer fact of they're new and we're going to see them for the first time. Mm-hmm. As far as the returning guys, you know, the Trevin Brazils, the DJ Wagners, the Carter Knoxes, is there anything you want to see from them in particular in these exhibitions? Or are they really just known quantities with this team? Or is there anything about, you know, involving them that you think we need to learn from these, you know, these exhibitions and also just the early season? Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said earlier, with exhibitions, it can be, you know, maybe some fool's gold sometimes what you see. Like, I don't think Cincinnati is a better team than Michigan, but they beat Michigan 100-98. So defense optional, but still, you know, so sometimes, you know, it's a mirage or whatever. But I think the biggest thing that I'm looking for from those guys in these exhibitions is, first off, with Billy Richmond, how much of a jump shot is there? I know that's something that they've talked about, you know, him working on a ton in the offseason. So how much is it there? How much is he ready to, you know, not just be a driving threat, but, you know, a mid-range or outside threat as well? Because you know with Billy Richmond, the defense is there, the effort plays are there, and, you know, he's an exceptional athlete who can get to the rim pretty much at ease. So how much of a threat can he be, you know, in the mid-range? How much of a threat can he be from the perimeter? You know, I think he only hit 1 3-point shot last season, and that was in the SEC tournament, if I'm not mistaken. So how much do you see from him, you know, in progressing in that department? Excuse me, goodness. with DJ Wagner, you know, how much, you know, we've heard about, you know, how much more, I guess, confident he is in his jump shot. You know, how much does that kind of play a role into it? How much does he, you know, how do he and, you know, Darius Acuff play together, I think, is another big thing. That's a, you know, kind of a different topic altogether, but mm-hmm. you know, I think that's kind of what you want to see with DJ Wagner is, you know, how much, you know, is there less of a hitch in his shot? Is there, I don't want to say hesitation in his shot, because that doesn't feel like the right word, but I guess how much more confidence mm-hmm. is there in his shot? With Carter Knox, I think the biggest thing is how much did going through the NBA draft process help him out? You know, how ready is he to kind of maybe step into the role of being the guy on this team, which, you know, is he going to be that? Is he going to be, you know, the guy ready for that? You know, when talking to him for a basketball preview edition, you know, he said that he wants to be a, you know, all conference, all defensive player. So, you know, how much is he ready to step into that role, and how much did he learn from the NBA draft combine? And then with Trevin Brazil, I think it's, you know, how much more can you, I guess, grow and develop in the John Calipari system? You know, we've heard about, you know, he's added a lot of muscle in the off season. You know, he's, you know, he looked apparently really good in the off season, and I was, you know, thoroughly impressed with the times that we've gotten to see him. So I think those are the biggest things that I see with those four main returners coming back from last season's team. I think those are the biggest things that you want to, you know, see, you know, especially early on from those guys.
One great thing about Anthony, and one of the reasons Matt nominated him to be an AP voter when that spot opened up, was Anthony knows a lot about a lot of teams. And so one of my favorite things that you do when I'm editing your basketball stories, especially your, you know, anytime Arkansas schedules a new opponent, or, you know, we're doing it, we're kind of previewing the game, Anthony will name, and I know you obviously are doing research, but I mm-hmm. also honestly believe you can probably do a lot of it without a lot of prep.
Yeah.
He will name everybody on their roster and a bunch of stats and everything you need to know about them, and here's what they did last year. And it's very impressive. And so what I wanted to ask is, you mentioned Cincinnati and their exhibition against Michigan, mm-hmm. but what do we need to know about Cincinnati and about Memphis? Obviously, they're games that aren't going to count, but as mm-hmm. far as what we can expect to see, you know, how Arkansas might match up with them, what, you know, because part of what you take from exhibitions is relative to competition. You know, the same way we talk about in football, you know, okay, week one, you played your FCS team. Defense looked awesome. Okay, but it was an FCS team. You know, obviously these are not
defense
FCS equivalent.
Awesome,
no, you know what I'm talking
either.
About.
Let's, yeah. No, I'm
but I think, and so obviously these are not FCS equivalents, but in terms mm-hmm. of the level of competition you're seeing also is going to influence some of the viewpoints. So what do we need to know about Cincinnati and about Memphis?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing with Cincinnati is Wes Miller is on the hot seat. So
okay.
like coming into the season, that team is going to be, you know, I don't want to say desperate, but like, you know, he really needs to show something in, I think, year three or year four, you know, if his tenure with Cincinnati, you know, what is there to show? And last year was supposed to be the year that it all kind of came together for Cincinnati. A lot of returning production, good transfer class, preseason top 25, you know, as high as number 7 in KenPom at one point, and then it just kind of collapsed mm-hmm. and they were, know, they finished, I think, 18-15 in the regular season, and then, you know, accepted an invitation to play in the college basketball crown.
What is,
you know,
that?
It's the, it's the new Fox Sports alternative to the NIT.
Interesting.
Which was diabolical hoops, but it was still it was still on my television. Don't get me wrong, but but yeah. So I think that's the overarching theme of the Cincinnati team this season is, you know, can Wes Miller keep his job, basically? You know, how hot is his seat? You know, I can't say for sure, but I think it's a pretty consensus opinion that it's at least warm to a certain degree. So how ready, you know, is this team to save Wes Miller, save Private Wes? But I think when you look at the roster, there's certainly, you know, things to like about the team. You know, Sean Abayev was a top 30, you know, freshman prospect in this previous class. So, you know, how ready is he to step up and maybe be the guy for this team? You know, he looked good against Michigan, but of course, you know, asterisks, it's an exhibition. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm excited to watch him play. And, you know, Day-Day Thomas is the key returner. You know, how much of a step up is he going to take? How much of a, I guess, impact does Jizzle James getting dismissed from the team play early on? And, you know, they bring in some good transfers. Kirk Risa, Kentucky, you know, he obviously, you know, was out for a lot of last season because he broke his foot, if I'm not mistaken. And then Sincere Harris coming from West Virginia, a team that should have been in the tournament, but you know, I digress. Had to get Texas in
Don't
there.
Don't get him started.
and then Jalen Celestine as well. You know, I think those are kind of the big time or big name transfers, and I may be forgetting somebody. But, you know, how ready is that team to you know, put Sean, or not Sean Miller, Wes Miller. That's his brother. Yeah.
Oh, are they really brothers?
They are brothers. Yeah, both sweaty guys.
runs in the family.
Of course. But yeah, you know, so I think there's a lot of intrigue in the Cincinnati roster. There's some potential there. You know, you'll like the pieces, but, you know, there was potential there last year. So how ready is that team to, you know, show that maybe last year was more of a fluke than the story?
What about Memphis?
That's the big thing, yeah. And then with Memphis, it's a lot of new pieces there.
Okay.
You know, and you know, with Memphis, I don't think that there's you know, with Memphis there's always a story, and I think Penny Hardaway is a good coach and maybe a, you know, almost underrated coach with, you know, kind of the stuff that has had to, I guess, you know, that's kind of gone on there. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's
what
an interesting
is this
job
for him. It's been a little while, but I don't know exactly
but,
what year
they're
he's
always,
in.
They're always good, mm-hmm. But you know how much of it is down. Yeah, Memphis is good. I like the roster, but it's all kind of new pieces. They lost PJ Haggerty to the transfer portal, obviously. Doug McDaniel, I think, is exciting coming in from Michigan. Kansas State. He used to be at Michigan, but then I am pulling up the roster just to make sure I don't forget anybody. But yeah, I mean, you know, Aaron Bradshaw, obviously he was a Kentucky guy with John Calipari in his freshman year. So that'll be interesting to see how he fits into it. Sincere Parker, I'm not sure how things are going with him because he transferred in from McNeese State, you know, where he was kind of the sixth man, but also kind of, you know, awesome to watch, you know, started his career at St. Louis. You know, he is kind of going through a little bit of a legal thing right now. Uh-oh. So
is there like an eligibility, like whether is he going to be, is there like suspension stuff? Is there like questions about whether
he's
going to play?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to be playing.
Okay.
You know, I probably should have looked that up beforehand. But, you know, he's gone through some off-season, off-court stuff. So I'm not sure how much I expect him to play. But it's a fully, you know, it's a very new look Memphis roster.
So they're going to be trying to learn a lot from the game against Arkansas,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Penny has done a good job of putting together teams like this in the past, and I think it would be foolish to say, you know, he can't do it again. So Memphis is a team that intrigues me a lot. I think they were picked second in the AC because they dropped
the
Athletic.
Yeah, just American Conference.
Just the air conditioner. but
I've not heard anybody say that. That's
that was the
one.
First thing that popped into my mind when I saw that.
It's weird. I'm like, are we calling it the AC? Because I never really referred to it as the AAC. I always called it the American. Mm-hmm. And so we're still calling it the American. But is anyone going to abbreviate it to the AC, like in a serious way?
I don't know. I am.
I hope they will.
But yeah,
they need to get
the air conditioner conference.
See, they can get a sponsorship. You know, the Big 12 was going to try to sell the naming rights to its conference. They should get and I don't know any air conditioning companies, but they should get an air conditioning company. The what's an air conditioning company? The I don't know something American conference.
The Bud Anderson Heating and Cooling Conference.
The Bud Anderson Heating and Cooling American Conference. There's still the American conference.
Yeah, of course. My, but you got my mistake. You know. How could I forget?
You know, because isn't it like what the shelter insurance battle line rivalry or whatever? Or maybe it's something like that. You know, you got to stick. You got to still have your goofy have name, but you got to stick your brand in front of it.
Yeah. Shout out Bud Anderson Heating and Cooling. This is not a paid advertisement, so free ad. But yeah, Memphis intrigues me. Yeah.
Speaking of free ads, Darius Acuff had a media availability today, and he was singing the praises of Chicken Heads, which is,
that's
I guess,
where I'm
a
going
wing
after
place.
This. Yeah.
I was gonna say, I've never been. I've heard it's great. He said the hot lemon pepper
the lemon
wings.
Lemon pepper
are his,
wings. That's what I'm
thing.
Getting. Yeah.
So I did want to ask you though about the Acuff availability. I was not on
about
it.
About the chicken.
Not about the chicken, but you haven't eaten it yet. So afterwards, you'll have to give us a full report about if it's good. With the Acuff presser, was that the first time media had been able to talk to him?
We talked to him in the summer a bit, okay. But that was with Trevin and Nick Pringle
sure.
as well.
And so this
first
was
time
interesting.
One on media.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I was
going to
say one, but it's not one on one.
One on, I don't know, like a dozen. It was interesting that they did that really with mm-hmm. just one player. But I was reading through, you know, I have the transcript of what he said. I haven't watched the video yet, but it seems like he was able to offer some pretty good insight, mm-hmm. Especially for a young kid. Whenever you got a freshman in any sport, you're not sure what it's going to be like. You don't know how many media interviews they've done. Typically with somebody like him who's had a lot of attention and things like that, they're pretty good at it because they've got some experience talking to reporters. Mm-hmm. But did you feel like you learned anything about him, about the team from talking to him today?
I learned that he likes chicken heads, and I'll be experimenting with that after the show. But no, he sounds confident in the team, which I think everybody is confident in their team at this stage of the year. So that's not necessarily news. But you know, we talked to him a little bit about the dynamic of playing with DJ Wagner, which is going to be, I think, one of the big things to watch for. You know, in these opening exhibitions, because on paper, that's probably your starting backcourt is Acuff and Wagner. So how are those guys going to play with each other? And John Calipari had mentioned that, you know, they hadn't done it like a ton kind of in the summer and in the fall. We got to see it a little bit in Hot Springs, and there were some moments where you could kind of tell that they hadn't played together a ton. So how are they going to look against, you know, other you know, teams? You know, outside competition, I think, is a big thing. But, you know, but there were also moments in that scrimmage where you could see like, okay, yeah, this is the potential that they have when they play together. So there's a lot to like, and then there's also the question marks there. And then I asked him about the front court and playing with those guys, and you know, they've got a lot of length, versatility, size, a lot of different ways they can play with their big guys, and you know, they can also bring the ball up the floor. Malik Ewan, he talked about how, you know, Malik Ewan can move like a guard, which is something that you can see when you watch his tape, and we got to see a little bit in the practices we got to see, and then the pro day we got to watch on the stream, and then the Hot Springs scrimmage as well. You know, each of those guys, you know, are comfortable with the ball in their hands, which, you know, opens up a lot of different, you know, avenues that, you know, can you play five out and stuff like that. So I think, you know, hearing him talk about that kind of makes me think that it's, you know, they're excited about what they have in the front court, which we've known for a while. But you know, hearing him talk about just how dynamic, I guess it is the right word. You know, it intrigues me. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, just because we haven't gotten to see it fully against, you know, outside competition and all of that stuff. But I think those are the big takeaways that I have from today's media availability.
Before we get you out of here, I want to ask you about the other sport that you spend a lot of your time on, which is soccer. Arkansas soccer is wrapping up the regular season on Sunday against Oklahoma, and they're in first place in the SEC, but the title race is going to come down to this last weekend. So can you explain to someone like me, and also to our audience, who has not necessarily, maybe hasn't been following all of the soccer season, what is kind of at stake this weekend, and what does Arkansas need to do themselves and have happen? Do they control their own destiny?
They do control their own destiny, yes. So there's a lot that can happen. Basically, I mean, they win the SEC regular season title with a win. So ideally, if for them, they go out and they win, you know, and then that's no questions asked. They could win it with a draw and some other things going their way, and then they could also win with a loss and a lot of things going their way. So the big thing is, you know, go out there and win, and you know that's all you got to do is go out there and beat a, you know, it's a, Oklahoma is solid, so that's who they play on Sunday. You know, surprise. but that's the big thing there. You know, they, them, Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Tennessee can all, you know, all theoretically win the league, depending on how results go. And Arkansas's got Oklahoma. Let's see. Vanderbilt has South Carolina. Georgia plays at Mississippi State, and Tennessee hosts Alabama. So all of those games are going to be going on Sunday. And, you know, obviously, as a reporter, I'll have my eyes on those during the game or before the game because Tennessee plays an early game. All the games should be kicking off at the same time.
Oh, interesting. I think
that's, no, no, not that's my opinion. Oh, not that they are. Oh, they should
be. I was going to say, I was like, that's kind of weird.
No,
but
they absolutely should be because that's how they do it in, you know, professional soccer on the last day. Because then
that makes sense.
Yeah, then you don't know what's going on in the other games.
That's kind of
so,
fun.
Yeah.
I bet that makes for a chaotic end a little
it
bit.
It does.
Everybody but, pull the phone out, see what's yeah, happening.
Exactly. Greg Sankey hit me up for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, so you know, there's a lot of different things that can happen. And but basically, if Arkansas wins, Arkansas wins the SEC regular season title and has, you know, the top seed in the SEC tournament, which, you know, a lot of times, you know, power conference tournaments don't mean a ton. Not saying that they don't mean anything, because obviously they do.
Well, we see that in other sports too, where your conference championship game, your conference tournament isn't always, the stakes aren't that high. You're looking at what's next, especially for a team like Arkansas. Yeah. You're looking at NCAAs.
Yes. I mean, they've got a first round bye secured. So, I mean, they've got all of that kind of in place. Now it's just, you know, winning the league. That's at stake. So that's, yeah, you win and you do it. You tie, you might do it. You lose, you still
you
might
can,
do it. But you know, don't want to do that.
Don't tempt the soccer gods.
Yes, exactly. Which, you know, they kind of did it with their draw at Missouri. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a game Missouri also needed to win as well, mm-hmm. because now they're eliminated from postseason contention as well. But, you know, it's an interesting Sunday coming up. So it's, yeah, any... Well, not anybody. One of those four teams can win, or all of those four teams can win. You know, it's just going to be intriguing to see, you know, what happens. And then there's all sorts of tiebreakers and everything that I don't want to get into because they're complicated. And
you'll have to sort through it on our site if it happens. Anthony will have coverage of that game on Sunday on WholeHogSports.com. He and Ethan will also have exhibition men's basketball coverage. So it's getting to be their time with women's basketball and men's basketball, and then postseason soccer, which is always a big deal for Arkansas. But we thank you for joining us on our show today, and we hope to see you back here tomorrow when I believe Matt Jones will be back in our chair, and we'll talk a little bit more about all things Razorback sports. Thanks for joining us.